everybody. Welcome to Slip Angle's extensive coverage of the One Lap of America. It's day six. And today we're going to be talking with Tom O'Gorman here after the morning session at Summit Point, which is, I think, a really cool place to drive and kind of a really nice spot out in West Virginia. Tom, you drove the ZR1 today, and that track is very fast. What was that like today?
Yeah, it's so cool. And honestly, after the 80s and 90s and humid weather we've had in the South the last couple of days, it's about 50 degrees, cloudless sky, sunny and perfect here in West Virginia. And it's like the best morning ever. It was a ton of fun. We came here and tested in March. So we kind of, from this point on in the event, we've been to the tracks with this car. We have a game plan. We know where we should be. So this morning we went out first. And we're a little off the times from March, but obviously on a green track at 8:30 in the morning, that's to be expected. And as far as we can tell right now, from Steve's official, unofficial, official timing and scoring notebook, we are P1 for the morning segment right now.
Well, I will say that Steve's been pretty reliable with those scores. I should just be texting him regularly to figure out what's happening.
You should. We literally have gotten to the point where when Steve bikes back over from timing and scoring after about the top 12 to 15 of run, it's just a whole like gathering around, and he just holds it like a he holds it up proud like a billboard, and everybody looks for their times.
Well, yeah, he's been really good, and you've talked on your Instagram stories at length about what the team effort is like and your game plan. And I'm really excited that today you're showing like kind of what happens while it happens in terms of the routine, because I think routine is really important for making sure that you don't forget anything as you get to the track, because it's like a really stressful morning.
Yeah, totally. And today I've been kind of keeping that in my back pocket. I knew I wanted to show, you know, we have that flow down where we're not even communicating anymore. It's just a rhythm. But I wanted to save that for a day where it was kind of normal. And we haven't had one of those in a couple of days, which is probably a perfect segue into yesterday down in Atlanta, which was interesting.
So we talked to Moss and Scott Robertson and a few others yesterday. The transit from NOLA to AMP was difficult for most. Did you guys have any particular unique difficulties?
Only some scares, actually. So we did not take Andy Smedegaard's wise advice and go up through Birmingham and avoid the major storms. We went through the storms. So that was the Montgomery to Atlanta route. And we got some major, you know, road debris. We had to pull over at one point because the visibility got really bad. All the restaurants were closed because the power was out, so we didn't get dinner. And then when we got back on the road, we started to get a warning that the left front tire was going flat, and started to, you know, frantically search, okay, where's a Walmart, where's a tire shop, something like that. We got to, you know, get a contingency plan together, get this thing plugged. And then the dash shows that the tire went back up a pound. And we realized that we sat long enough with the low pressures in the tires, and the cold rain was cold enough that the tires had all dropped to sub TPMS happy sensor spots. So we started to get flat tire warnings for three of the four tires, and we basically just ignored it and hoped it was okay. And it was.
Gotcha.
Other than that, it was just a long kind of brutal riding through the storms, really. Got to the hotel pretty late. It was about, I'm not going to complain. We got there at like 12:45. It wasn't at 4 a.m. It was not a Scott Robertson night by any means.
Scott Robertson on the show yesterday, and I guess this is true for Super K as well, they got to the hotel so late that when they left in the morning, the engine hadn't fully cooled down yet.
Oh, my God.
Which is, I think, kind of amazing.
It is, and that's like a one lap, like, truism or whatever. That's the real one lap, I think. So like I said, I will never complain about a transit. I will never complain about our arrival times for this week, because we've had it pretty good.
Yeah. So what about AMP yesterday? I watched a couple of videos, maybe by Robert from this morning that he posted yesterday. Kudos to him for continuing to do video coverage, because it's just like trying to release videos every day while running an event is impossible, because I'm trying to release podcasts every day and trying to live my regular life, and it's difficult. And so like, man, and he's doing one lap and releasing videos.
Yeah. I can't even get my GoPro in my car and get a video of the car, let alone post it and he's like vlogging every day. So yeah, massive props. I haven't actually got to watch much of them, but I can't wait to like go relive the whole week.
Yeah,
next week and rewatch them all.
If you guys aren't watching Robert Thorne's videos, you should. He talked on the show a few days ago about why he's doing it, and practically the reason he started the channel was because he was kind of doing it for himself. He's not necessarily trying to get YouTube famous. It's just you know, there's a lot of experiences on One Lap, and if you don't find a way to keep track of them, you have no record of it. And so, you know, the year that he took the big bad wolf makes for a great story, and there was awesome things that happened all week, and he doesn't have a reference to it. And so he's doing this week practically for himself, just so that he can, you know, enjoy it later.
Right. Yeah, that's super cool. I guess that's kind of how I treat my Instagram stories, but that's a little more simple, and you know, you just film it and post it. But yeah, definitely go watch his videos. And I forget the question. What did you ask me about? About AMP.
Yeah. Sorry. So I guess my first question is: did the stock ZR1 blow sound?
We don't know. So to get the sound thing out of the way, basically, it wasn't clear whether or not we were on a muffled or unmuffled day, which is a difference of 97 to 103 decibels. Even it sounded like Brock wasn't clear on whether or not the track allowed one or the other. But I do know that a significant portion of the field blew sound.
Well,
I know from working at Atlanta Motorsports Park for track night that it is extremely strict, and a lot of stock car, I mean, like stock Camaros, stock Corvettes, all kinds of stock muffled cars blow sound there. So I suspect we did. I know that the record was 109.5.
That's really, really loud.
It's so loud.
And I'm speculating, but I'll say that that was probably a Mustang, because I just want to go on record on the show that I do not think that modern Mustangs sound good. Like they're just obnoxious, and like, it's not a good sound, and it's piercingly loud. And, yes. I don't like
Shots
it.
Shots fired.
Not one bit.
No, we've had that conversation in the car a couple times because Steve feels the same way. I'm hot and cold. Like far away every once in a while, I'm like, man, this sounds cool. And then every once in a while nearby, I'm like, shut up. But I think there's a white Camaro that's in the field that is just ear blisteringly loud. And I would put money on that specific car, but I bet all the Mustangs blew.
Yeah. So the video from AMP though just looks so wild. It's tight and it's got maybe a little bit of an autocross feel to it. Tell me about what it's like to drive a 750 horsepower car there. Like what do you do differently? Is it just, are you manhandling it the whole time?
Dude, it was so fun. It's the most fun I've had in this car throughout all the testing we've done, all of the week that we've been competing here. It was just a blast. And I was nervous about that, to be honest, because I've driven other cars there, but mostly like I drove Claptrap, the K24 Fit there, and I've driven like an ITS Integra there and some other, you know, kind of appropriately sized for the space kind
sure.
of cars. But this track is, the best description is if Spa were an autocross, because it's like massive elevation, beautiful scenery in the hills of like northern Atlanta. But then it's really, I mean, like the top speeds, I think, are only maybe 120, 125 miles an hour in the Corvette.
But there are some high speed corners for sure. I was watching Robert video
a lot.
Yeah. I guess maybe the analogy I was thinking of was like, you know, your lap is basically like, you know, a professional rodeo person trying to ride a bull, right? Like that's what the ZR1 is on a track like that. You're just getting thrown around the whole time.
You know, it honestly translated way better than I expected. And it was also damp conditions. So we were expecting it to be wet. It didn't rain after maybe 6 a.m. or so. So the track was damp, but dry patches were starting to form by the time we went on track. And it was dry enough that we were getting tire squeal. And the grip was surprisingly good everywhere except for the final carousel, if you're familiar. The last long left-hand carousel that goes on, it seems like all the way to Alabama, is covered in trees. And that was the last place that was kind of damp and sketchy. So it was kind of like fourth gear in the Corvette, like almost no throttle, dancing sideways through that entire corner. But otherwise, I mean, it was a ton of fun. The car translated really well to that track. And I do think, even though it's tight, there's a couple of hairpins and a couple of big digs. That the combination of the power of the car and my familiarity with the track is why I was able to just nip Andy's time in the morning. I'm absolutely confident in, especially having watched his videos, that if we'd have run in the dry in the afternoon, he would have slaughtered us. But that's okay. I still wish he would have got to dry in the dry because it was so fun.
Well, one of the things that I've enjoyed seeing on your Instagram, and this was maybe a mistake that we made on our end, but I think it was a personal choice, you guys get to the track every morning in time to do a track walk or ride or whatever before you go out on track. And I think about my own experience from when we ran, and practically it was really difficult to be at the track that early because we were always arriving at the hotels so late. And so there's a remarkable benefit, obviously, to having a reliable car, but there's also a tremendous benefit of running near the front. And that benefit is as soon as the afternoon session is over, you get a head start on your transit. And so that means that you practically just, you're guaranteed more sleep.
Yeah, this event is structured in a way that the faster you are, the event becomes exponentially more easy to do, partially because you're more competitive, partially because you get to leave the track early, you get to go to the hotel early, you're more incentivized to get to the track early and walk it and see the conditions before you go out. I mean, everything about being in the top 10 to 15 is better.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a success.
So it's kind of, insult to injury kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like success begets success, right? Like when you are doing well, it's a lot easier to keep doing well.
Yes, I think, and you're catered to in a way because you are more well rested. You have more time to handle things. Like, I mean, yesterday, to fast forward a bit, we had to stop at an old friend of One Lap's shop in South Carolina, and being Cinco de Mayo and having a long transit, we didn't have time to stop for Mexican, but we did enjoy a Modelo in the parking lot and hang out for about 45 minutes. And you know, we would not have done that had we left the track 2 hours later.
Oh, absolutely not. Speaking of Cinco de Mayo, I want to say that we missed you out on Taco Track Day, but it was
so fun.
Like just an excellent, regular basic track day for Grid Life. Some cool, like, Taco Track Day branded tees and, a Baja Blast, like, margarita cup, which is pretty funny and cool. And then
I want,
like,
one of those chalices.
Yeah.
Cactus chalice.
It's pretty cool. And then, tacos for everybody at lunch. There had to be like 200 people there that got served tacos. It was fun.
That's amazing. I'm jealous. We have to do another one.
Yeah. I hope so.
Just for me.
Yeah. And so the afternoon session is coming up. You probably ran pretty well this morning. I can't remember the corner numbers very well. I think it is 13 that's the last corner on track?
10.
Okay, 10. I want to ask you something about Summit Point, Maine, and I have a comparison track just in terms of length and feel. And I don't know if you'll agree, but to me, it just feels so similar to Autobahn North in that it's kind of a short track and it's flowy and it's not super technical. There's not really elevation, but it feels like, to me, it was just so fun to drive.
I would say maybe if Autobahn North and like Black Hawk Farms had a baby or something like that, because it still has a little bit more of an old school feel, more than a country club feel when you're here. But I see where your head's at. Yeah. So were you going to ask a question specifically about turn 10 or just how the track feels?
Well, turn 10 specifically, like, I think when you posted on your Instagram this morning, there was sand that may have been at turn 10. But
that was down in the turn 5, like carousel section. But
gotcha.
There was actually, they were mowing when we got here, so we were expecting the track to be covered in grass, and luckily they did a little better job of cleaning up than Eagles Canyon, so we were good.
Right. Well, I guess I wanted to talk about turn 10 because it doesn't really feel or look like there's much camber there. But one thing I remember trying to coach my co-driver through, James, who's driving there again today, was like just how fast that corner is relative to what you think you can do. Talk to me a little bit about how you approach that corner, because to me, it seems like it's very, very fast.
I honestly have had the opposite experience, and I think it's probably isolated because of the vehicle I have the pleasure of driving, but my exposure to Summit Point before this was iRacing, and I expected that corner, as you said, to be a very fast kind of turn one mid-Ohio style corner where you just drag the brakes and just throw the car through there, track all the way out to the dirt and you know, haul the mail. But the braking point for the Corvette is actually the bridge way before pit in. And then it's like, I mean, we're in the middle of fifth gear there coming off the S's, brake at the bridge. I mean, really whoa the car down, get it down into fourth. And it feels slow relative to how fast we're coming in there. So a couple of the other cars I've talked to, my general note has been the corner is tighter than you think it is if you've driven it in iRacing, but also know that I'm in a car with
a million horsepower
and a lot of everything else. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you talk about entering that turn. Did you just say in fourth gear? So, I mean, it's still fast.
It is still a fast corner. Yeah, I would bet the min speed there is maybe 92 to 95.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit less, but that's still pretty quick.
So it's, you know, a little bit.
I just watched Scott Robertson pull in. I'm curious to go talk to him after.
Oh, yeah.
And see how fast he was through there.
So, like, I mean, for reference, turn 5 at NCM or turn 15, 16 at NCM are probably, you know, 105 plus. But there's an awful lot of runoff room in those corners so that, you know, if you do track out a little wide, you should hopefully have enough room to collect it. But Summit Point's a little bit different.
Yeah, and that's why I say maybe a little bit more like Blackhawk in that it's old school. So the consequences here are certainly high, and turn 10 here is probably one of the better spots, to be honest. But if you look at definitely down through the chute, which is turn 4 into the heavy braking zone for the hairpin at turn 5, I mean, that is just, there is no grace. You have to be on top of your stuff big time. And that's probably the fastest corner on the track. We're going through there. I'm on the rev limiter in fourth going into it, and I'm really not slowing down much. So that's
good
also going to be
grief.
That's faster than turn 10 for sure. And yeah, that's a big boy corner right there. But this whole track, I mean, the big surprise for me, again, with my reference point of iRacing, is just how fast this car gets from place to place. And I expected the track to be a little bit flowier than it is. And it's a little bit point and shoot in this car. And that surprised me in March. And I'm glad that we came here in March. So I knew that coming into today for
sure. Gotcha. Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm still thinking about what you said 5 minutes ago about, you know, what Summit Point Maine is. And it's interesting that some of my absolute favorite tracks are Autobahn North, Blackhawk, and Summit Point. I don't know what those tracks have in common, but I just like them.
They have a feel to them that they're from. I haven't driven Autobahn North much. I hopefully we'll get to a lot more now that I'm in their backyard. But they have I would say Mid-Ohio kind of still has a bit of this feel where it's like, you know, it's from the 60s and it's cool because of it. I don't know how to say it better than that, but it's got like a vintage feel to it. That
yeah.
They put a racetrack there because they wanted to, and now it's classic, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So this afternoon, I mean, you and I talked about your lack of data review between sessions. What are you going to do between what differences or changes will you make on the track from this morning into this afternoon?
Well, I was about a second off of my fast time from March this morning, but I did it 3 laps in a row, and I could not do that in March. So I think I probably more by accident found the sweet spot of not abusing the car too much. I would like to get a little bit quicker, but we covered the field by a little over 2 seconds, I think, this morning, and actually put a couple of cars between us and Thorn and us in Super K. So we theoretically extended our lead a bit, and I don't know that I need to do much more than that. So I'm hoping to just go do the same thing and maybe respond to the increased grip a bit, since it's not going to be 8:30 in the morning anymore.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I definitely don't feel like I need to go take any chances or do anything else
sure.
different. It's mostly just more of the same, do 3 more clean laps and get on the road to Gingerman.
Sure. So long transit tonight to Gingerman. One of the things that I'm really excited about tomorrow is I have a personal expectation that the majority of the grid life entries into one lap of America or the grid lap, the perennial grid lap, grid life drivers.
You got a little Southern drawl there.
Yeah, I can't speak. I'm channeling my inner Luke McGrew.
Vopper.
My Vopper. I expect that the drivers who run in grid life regularly will put on an absolute clinic at Gingerman tomorrow.
Maybe. I mean, we don't really know, I guess. I don't know how many people have been there before. I know it's on the one lap schedule almost every year because it's so close to South Bend.
Right.
So it sounds like it's kind of an annual finishing spot. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see, I mean, Scott will probably make a bunch of people feel really bad about themselves with his Miata. I certainly hope that Alex and I are at the top, at the absolute front. I'm trying to look around. There's not a lot of Grid Life people in this event, to be honest.
We counted like 10 or so teams that are.
So who am I missing?
So the TTRS, Super K, you, Scott Robertson, Robert Thorne.
I don't know that Thorne's been to Gingerman much. He's from like Oklahoma and East Coast, but you're right. Mackay and Brandon.
If
well.
This was maybe pre Tom at Grid Life, but in 17, Thorne drove the Big Bad Wolf in an unlimited season in Time Attack. So he went to several events in that car.
I remember him doing South. I don't remember him at Midwest.
I think he did a 29 at Gingerman.
Okay. And
I think it was on 615K pluses at the time. They were big, but
that's
like
fast.
That's a fast lap. I'm pretty sure that's right.
That is really fast on those tires.
It could have been on Hoosiers too. I don't know. I mean, he was running unlimited, but like I do know that he's run a whole lot of 615K on that car at that time.
Sure.
But tomorrow should be really fun. Like that track is. I really hope that Andy and Alex turn it up just a little. Like you're gonna be fast, but like. That's kind of home turf for everybody, so we'll see who sets the fast lap for the day.
Yep, we already have an agreement. You know how the format for one lap works is the first four or five cars go out, but it's kind of amongst ourselves who goes first.
Yep.
And we've been trading back and forth a bit depending on the results for whether or not Super K or us go first. And Alex was like, I really want to go first tomorrow because it's Gingerman and I want to go first. It is all you, bud, because we're going to be the same speed for sure.
That's so cool. Your trust and his trust are infinitely important to me, and I think you guys both have lap time targets that you want, but I'll never tell. So,
No, we've talked about it. We both know. I mean, he knows what we've done. I know that car has done in full Time Attack mode. It's like you said, it's a matter of whether or not they want to go to kill or not.
Yeah, I mean, that car on that track.
Here's a fun fact. Oh, sorry to
interrupt. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
We just watched some video from that car this morning. From a standing start at Summit Point, which the start-finish line is much further down the straightaway than you'd think, they're still in the middle of sixth gear when they get to the turn one.
What?
Yeah, of the seven-speed gear. It's literally like a Formula One car. They launch.
Cool.
It's so cool.
And I've seen the speed distance traces of that car as it accelerates through the DCT. And it's really exciting to see what they've done with that chassis and that transmission. And, you know, I'm so hopeful for them that it holds up for the rest of the week, because I think that will be, that may be one of the biggest accomplishments we've seen in one lap this year.
I would say already so. And I've had, for every message I've had that's a good job, I've had two that say, that S2000 is really fast to keep up with you guys. So, yeah, it's not gone unnoticed for sure.
Yeah. So, and it's got to be so rewarding that you guys are all kind of part of the same team, right? And the podium, all you guys know each other pretty well and, you know, like shared friendships throughout. Like, I think it's really cool this year.
Yeah, it's been cool. I mean, obviously I'm now a part of that team with the Grid Life, especially like the GLTC car and everything. And I hadn't known many of them very well before, maybe in passing. Even though I've known Brandon for years and years, and I've known Andy for years and years, but again, in passing, and having gotten to know them much better over the last 2 months and now to share this week, like it doesn't feel like we're competing against each other. And maybe that's easy for me to say, cause you know, we're leading right now, but I think it's really cool that, I mean, we've gone over video together, and it's like, it's just as exciting when Andy killed us yesterday in the oval or like beat us at NOLA in the afternoon, because it doesn't matter.
You know, it's like, it's a weird thing, right? Like, you know, everybody, like, you're competing against each other, you know? Kind of, but like you all want everybody to do their best.
Right. It's like a weird summer camp feel where it's like, you're just as excited that they did that as you are that you did your thing.
Yeah. So that is that is awesome. Y'all. Well, I mean, it's just an experience. And I talked on the show yesterday a little bit about it with Adam that, like, you know, if you're into cars and you do track stuff and you have the means, one lap is an experience that, like, I think everyone should do at least once. And my own experience is that once you do it once, that's, you know, then the hook's been set and you're just in it.
Yeah. It reminds me a massive amount of the Thunderhill 25 hour where when you go and you experience it for the first time and you get through it, the people you're with, it's like the coolest experience no matter how you do. And then you're like, crap, I have to do this every year now on because I can't not do this again. This is so fun.
Yeah. Well, and you've talked about the 25 at Thunderhill before. It's never something that I've experienced or even been to, but it's something that I would like to see.
Oh, I'm laying the groundwork hard with the ISM guys this week about we need to go out there and do it with something because it's, like I said, it's just the coolest race and the coolest track, and it's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
It just sucks that it's 36 hours away.
It's a little bit of a drive. But, well, we're about 25 minutes in, and you guys probably have to prep for your afternoon session. So I wish you the best. Drive safe, and have a great transit, very long transit to Gingerman tonight.
Thank you, sir. And finally, it is Steve's birthday. So everybody wish Steve Loudon a happy birthday, my teammate.
Happy birthday, Steve.
We got him the Starbucks cake pop for his birthday. Unfortunately, I couldn't figure out where to put the candle, but he enjoyed it.
I hope you guys are listening to the slip angle in the car because I imagine it makes things just a little bit more interesting to hear about what the other teams are doing.
It does, because even though we have the 3 hours of downtime between segments, you miss what other people are going through, and it's fun to catch up on.
I'm hoping that I can get Andy and Anne on the phone here in just a minute to talk with them about their challenges over the last couple of days.
That might be a challenge only because his car wouldn't start, and they think they have a dying key.
Oh, no.
So they're running around finding a key battery, but I wish you luck. Maybe you'll find him.
All right. Talk to you soon.
See you.
Bye. Welcome back to Slip Angle Podcast. This is segment two of day six. It's hard to believe it's day six already. I'm here with Alex Moss of Super K, and he's just finished driving the morning session at Summit Point, Maine, which is, I think this is probably the first time you've been to this track. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I've never been here before. I've seen it on iRacing. Watched a bunch of video, but it's not the same as being out there in the car.
So, I just got off the phone with Tom, and Tom was saying that it was his experience that turn 10, the last corner before the start finish, he felt was slower and tighter than what he was expecting based on driving in iRacing. But my impression of that corner is that it's pretty quick. What do you think?
Yeah, it's still pretty fast. iRacing uses the Miatas there a whole lot, and Tom's got 700, 650 horsepower Corvette right now, so I'd imagine that feels a little tighter.
Well, he said that he's still in fourth gear as he makes his way through the corner, so it's not slow.
Yeah. it's pretty fast. This whole track is really fast, actually. Well, not the whole track. There's a tight portion in the back, but it's definitely... It's like Blackhawk. It feels like Blackhawk.
Help
a lot.
For people listening to the show, I apologize, but I'm talking to separate people here. So if the same content comes up, we'll try and make it interesting. Tom and I were talking about my favorite tracks, and they all have a very similar feel. I said that Summit Point, Maine reminds me of the flow and feel of Autobahn North. And he said, yeah, I kind of get that. But he was like, I think Summit Maine is basically if Blackhawk and Autobahn North had a baby. And what's interesting is when I think about like my absolute favorite tracks for vibes and like fun places to drive, it's Autobahn North and Blackhawk and Summit Maine. Those are like, they're just cool spots and I can't tell you why.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Autobahn North at all. It's almost like too small. But yeah, Blackhawk, it's one of my favorites. And this honestly, it just feels like being at Blackhawk. I feel right at home, in amongst the trees. The track flows through the trees. One big, big, long straight, and then a little bit more tight and technical. Couple of fast corners, a bunch of small, slower corners, and then, yeah, that long straight where I was talking to Ryan Hollis and after the session, and she was saying that, you know, all the cars were flying by, meow, 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 and here comes Super Gay down the straight. I did 146.
You're not slow.
No. I guess Andy Hollis said he hit 170.
It's like a deceptive straight, too. It's just like it doesn't seem as big as it is, but the cars are going so fast.
Yeah, it's got, after the start-finish line, it's a little bit downhill as well, which I think helps get the speed up.
So tell me about the aero performance on this track. I mean, there are some high speed corners here and, you know, it's got, I think the track has really good flow. How does it feel to drive?
Yeah, it feels good. So I've done three laps now or four laps, including the recon lap. And this is my traditional struggle, with trying to go fast is having full commitment. And even though, you know, based on my studying and what have you, there's no surprises about where the track goes. It's, you almost have to, or I myself have to drive a session to connect what my car is doing to what I've seen on video. Sure. To say, okay, yeah, I can go full commitment here and I can brake deep and trail brake and, sure, and those kinds of things. So,
well, I think one of the big challenges of reviewing video is on the tracks that have elevation, especially substantial elevation, it's just so hard to internalize that based on video because it doesn't show very well on video.
Right. Yeah, I think yesterday's track, AMP, is the example of that. I wasn't driving AMP, but I watched a bunch of videos on it, and it looked, there was some elevation change there, but when we went out for the rolling shots, the media laps, after the morning, I got to go out on track, and you come around the corner and there's just this wall. It's like cars got to go rock climbing to get up it. It's crazy the amount of elevation that's there. Yeah. This track has a little bit of elevation, but you know, video makes it look as flat as Blackhawk, but it's not. There's a little bit of elevation here and there, but nothing major.
So your car is, I think we talked about before, turned down quite a bit relative to your time attack spec. How do you approach the lap any differently in order to get the best time?
No different. I mean, you just got to drive the car, right? You got to take what the car will give you. So, you know, the power thing, it still makes all the torque that it ever made, you know, pulling it off the corner. So the only thing you're doing is you don't have that pull down the straight. So it's purely straight line speed is the only difference. So, you know, you're able to brake a little bit later. But the drive the corner is exactly the same as I would with it turned all the way up.
Gotcha. So, just focusing on your braking points is just being slightly different. Are you reviewing data between sessions in order to figure out if you can improve?
No, I'm not. And the reason we're reviewing data, so we're lucky, you know, reviewing video, I should say. Sorry. We're lucky enough that, you know, Tom's kind of joined the ASM crew, so he's been good enough that when I drove Eagles Canyon and then also today, this is my second track I drove, he's come over and reviewed video with me and given me some pointers, which is super helpful and very nice of him. But reviewing data, I think, is really, really good when you're looking for those temps, you know, those final temps and looking for small mistakes. After three laps at a track, I'm not the kind of driver that's consistent enough to say, okay, here's what you're doing wrong.
I see.
We can see that in video, right? You can see you got to carry more speed here in video. We're not looking for, you know, 1 or 2 miles an hour. We're not looking for the way that I'm releasing the brakes yet. You know, we're not looking for those kinds of things. We're looking for, are you on the right line and that kind of stuff.
Right. Gotcha. Well, Tom, this morning when he was doing his recon lap, he found a couple of spots that were kind of sandy on the apex. You know, did you adjust your lines to manage the track conditions, or does that not really affect your strategy very much?
There's a little bit of dirt on the inside of five, which was, I didn't worry about it too much. It's on the inside. Those left tires were all unloaded. So, you know, I don't know whether that's the right approach or not, but I didn't. I did two laps in the morning on the scooter. And what I was looking for was things that I use on iRacing, like where I use the curbs and stuff like that. Is that safe to use on the real car? And there was a couple of spots, like the exit to 10, where we would go way over the painted curbs. But looking at that in real life, there's some pretty aggressive grinding in those that I don't want to run the car. I would run it over in time attack, but on one lap, I don't want to run it over and risk shaking something loose. So
drawing comparisons back to Blackhawk, does 7 at Blackhawk feel a lot like 10 at Summit Point?
It does. It feels a lot like it, especially with, you know, how you're tempted to run all the way over those painted curbs. 7 at Blackhawk is slower. The 10 here is faster for sure. But they're both right-handers. They both have pretty good runoff over the curbs, and they both lead onto a really big long straight.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, really similar. And they actually both have Blackhawk is more pronounced, but they both have a bit of a kink to the right, right as you want to start braking for.
Oh yeah, yeah. Two like very similar, very fun, rewarding tracks to drive, especially if you like your, especially if you like your average speed and your top speed to be kind of high.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. This is a fast track. It looks small and compact, but it's a fast track.
What about like braking temperatures and things like that? Do the brakes feel confident in the car?
Yeah. Yeah, they feel good. Again, getting that commitment for them. So I was actually talking to Andy about this as we were kind of debriefing after the session. But like turn 11 at Gingerman, and actually turn 3, turn 11 at Gingerman, those hard braking zones, when I'm like full kill time attack mode, it feels like I'm getting pushed right through the windshield when I hit the brakes there. Here, really? I'm still way more tentative, you know, not going that braking at the last minute with the absolute maximum pressure. Again, that's my confidence thing that I need to get going, and knowing that I can do that. Some drive, and that's a skill by itself, you know, being able to go out lap one and, you know, not having driven that track, even if it's like not that weekend, you haven't driven that track yet, but especially like never driven it before. What's your breaking point to absolutely maximize the entry of that turn?
So, for those not familiar, Alex and I have shared a story on the show before, but I'll recap it for you. A few years ago in one lap, Super K was running at Blackhawk, and Andy is particularly fast at Blackhawk. And, there was a session that was finished, and it was a really solid lap, but it wasn't Andy fast. And I was unaware that Alex was driving instead of Andy. So I messaged Alex and said, why was Andy so slow? And you took particular offense to that comment, which was not my intent. But the reason I'm bringing this story up at all is because it is remarkable to me just how fast you've gotten as a driver. I mean, of course the car has improved, and you weren't slow to begin with, but you've said something on a Gears and Gasoline video a couple of years ago, talking about, you know, what's the best first track car. And I brought it up multiple times on the show, which is the best track car is the one that you can afford to take to the track 20 times a year. It's not about modifying your car to make it faster, because ultimately, those things, take budget away from going to the track. And if you want to be a fast driver, you have to drive a lot. And you in particular have improved like so much in terms of maybe that difference in driving potential that we see between you and Andy? The difference right now is very, very small, if any, because you are solid in Super K. So I want to apologize on air for being rude to you by accident, but also like to just say, like, it's so impressive to see how fast you are as a driver now in that car.
Well, thank you. And for context, that was 3:01:17 I did.
Those are fast laps. Those are properly fast laps. Like really fast. But
yes, so in a car I know well, like this, so in this car, or even in trainer, at a track I know, in good conditions, like consistent conditions, I am pretty close to Andy. In this car, like at Speed Ring, when we were doing the speed sprints, we were sharing the car, and I managed to beat him there, which is a rarity. Where the big difference comes in is, like, the first lap out, he's going to dominate me in changing conditions or wet conditions. He's going to be way faster on a track that neither of us have seen before. He's going to be way faster right away. So basically if I know everything I've got to do and I figured it out, I can get pretty close.
Well, it's kind of a weird thing where, I mean, the only language you can use, right? Someone like Tom and someone like Andy, they're just aliens because they have this, uncanny ability to jump into any car and to get right to the limit pretty, pretty quick. And right. I would say that you are most comfortable in your own car and especially S2000s in general.
Yep. That's definitely true. And a progression, the time attack format suits me as a driver better. I think if you look at really all of the results from last year, I start the weekend way off the pace and then each session just get faster and faster and faster. And that's kind of an approach that's been working for me, in time attack, but it doesn't work for a format like this. This one lap, you got to go out there and full commitment on lap one, literally lap one. And like you've said in the past, turn one, lap one, is you're seeing that turn and that braking zone at an unfamiliar speed than you've ever seen it before, even if you're familiar with the track because it's a standing start.
Right.
Turn one, lap two is potentially the first time you've ever seen that corner at speed.
It's a weird thing, right? Because of course you could overslow and make sure that you're safe all the way through it and take it very easy. But you pay a big time penalty for that.
Yep. And my approach as a driver and also, when I've done a little bit of coaching here and there is the braking zones are kind of the last thing to work on.
Sure.
Because they take the most confidence and there's actually the least amount of time to be gained in those because you can always come off early and actually still maintain good speed through the corner. So, the amount of time a mistake costs you under braking is or by braking too much is generally less than getting on the gas too late or not maintaining corner speed. So,
sure.
So it's kind of the last thing I typically work on in the time attack format. Gotcha. But yeah, it costs you on an event like this.
Yep. So if Andy is out from underneath the car, hand the phone to him for just a minute. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you as always. You're always welcome on the Slip Angle Show. But go get your head right for the afternoon session and go out and be fast. See if you can beat Tom.
That's the plan. I don't think I'm going to beat Tom. He's got at least 25 miles an hour on me on the straights, and that's not when you account for probably what he's doing to me through the rest of the track. But my goal here is to stay ahead of the Shaky Dog guys, and unfortunately they're ahead of us by a few spots. So in the morning we think, based on our unofficial timing, so they're going to be closing that gap up to us, and hopefully if we can come away from Summit Point still in second place, I'll be very happy.
Awesome.
Going into Gingerman, which we will hopefully be strong at, although it may rain at Gingerman. and then the dry skid pad, we should also be strong at. And he is still working on that TT, so I'll probably try and get him to give you a call when he's available.
All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Abe.
Welcome back to the Slip Angle podcast for day 6 of One Lap of America coverage. We're at Summit Point today, or they are at Summit Point today, which is an awesome place to drive. I'm here with Andy Hollis, driving the One Lap McLaren. It's been a couple days since we talked to you, and I've heard that you had a bit of an adventure.
Oh, yeah. Things have the drama llama showed up in big time yesterday morning. After a long, horrendous drive through torrential rain and storms the night before, we thought that we were over the hump. We got to Atlanta Motorsports Park, arrived, parked the car, and I noticed a very fine spray of liquid coming out from behind the headlight on the one side, stuck my hand on it and realized it was coolant. The car has a pair of what they call low temp radiators up front there, which cool the transmission, the DCT, dual clutch trans, as well as the air-to-water intercoolers for the intake charge, so it can make maximum boost. We figured we were done, because getting one of those parts, one, is really, really hard, and then getting it into the car is even harder. It's, you know, kind of an 8-hour R&R job, and that assumes you don't break any little plastic bits as you're pulling it apart. And of course, no parts in the area for it to replace. But then we got to thinking, a bunch of guys in the paddock kind of came over and we basically MacGyvered the thing. So we were able to get access to the hoses behind it and bypass the one side so that the other side would continue to cool. But so I was able to take runs, because the thing is, if you DNF, scoring wise, you're really in a hole. So we got to grid. We ran with our group, but we ran towards the back. So I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I didn't want to be the guy that messes up the leaders and stuff. So we ran to the back of the group. And if I needed to pull off, I would. Took some tentative runs, finished, I don't know, like 21st or something. But I got times in the book and did not have the DNF. And then I cleaned it up a little more so that we could make our transits. It's holding. It's holding at this point. So the transits were fine. We had to keep refilling it just because it was burping out air, because enough coolant had gone out we kept filling it. But anyway, it seems to be nominal now. All attempts look good. The transit getting us over here. So we thought we were reasonably okay. Of course, Summit Point has really long straightaways, and I was worried about what that was going to do. You know, would the transmission overheat? Would it go into limp mode? Because my old 12C, you would get transmission errors with overtemps. And I was worried about that. So anyway, I go up to grid, and I arrange again to be at the back of the group, so I don't want to mess with the leaders. And worst case, I just pull off early if I need to. And car wouldn't start. I'm on grid, and they're calling me to the line. Car wouldn't start. And it's got, you know, keyless deal, and it's saying key not found. So I grab the key and I move it around to different parts of the vehicle. Then it says key found, key not found, key found, key not found.
No.
Punching the start button, frantically trying to get this going. Meanwhile, you know, my whole group has gone around and done their recon laps, and I see them forming up at the line.
Oh,
finally,
no.
It fires up. I'm like, woohoo! And I'm like, hey, Brocker, can I just skip the recon and go straight to the line? Like, of course, that's your option. I'm like, okay, great. So I go to the line on cold tires, cold brakes, cold everything. And it's cold out, and I try to launch it, and of course the car is just like wheel spin city, and I go down to the first turn. I'm like, I have no idea where to brake here now. Anyway, long story short, I made it through the session. I could feel it pulling power down the main straight, but it never coded out on the transmission, and we finished, it looks like, P4.
That's fantastic.
With, you know, your head's not in gear, your car's not running right, and all that stuff, and we nailed a P4 out of it. So
that is a
super
challenge.
Excited about that.
Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. But this is what One Lap is about. This is it. You know, you just can't plan on the drama, you know, and what's going to show up, and you got to meet it head on. So anyway, that's where I'm at right now. I'm breathing easy. I went and got a key for the keyless thing here, a local auto parts store, and I got back to the track, and I saw you call. So that's where we're at. It's been a great 24 hours.
Well, I talked to Tom over the last couple of days, and I kind of, I don't want to say chastised him, but I told him that he wasn't getting the full one lap experience because he's he's in the fastest, most reliable car. He gets to the hotel the earliest, and things just go right. And it's my experience that one lap is especially exciting when things don't go right.
Yeah, yeah, you said that the other day, and I hate you for that.
Well, I mean, but you'll have a story that you'll keep forever, right? Like these, you can't make these things up, and these are the kinds of things that don't happen all the time.
Yeah, yeah, no, and we were talking about that actually on the transit over here. It's like, because last night's transit was lovely. Going through the Appalachian Mountains and all, just lovely, lovely. Weather was good and all that kind of stuff, and so... But you know what? We won't remember that transit. What we'll remember is the one the night before that was horrendous. We'll remember that one forever. We likely won't remember the one from last night.
Right.
But you can only do those crazy ones every so often.
So
hey, I'm gonna hand the phone over to Ann a moment. She had something she wanted to add to that. Hold on.
Oh, perfect.
Hey there.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Pretty good. So I sent you. You should give us a call. So yeah, yesterday. You know, when the car breaks, the thing that is so amazing is how everybody comes over and just pulls for you. I mean, bolts are coming, zip ties are coming, people are volunteering to go get parts. And these are our competitors, right? But that is not what this whole thing is about. You know, somebody said, what's one word to describe one lab? And I have to say family. Because we all really take care of each other. So
yeah,
it was quite an experience.
I was talking a little bit with Tom this morning about the competition of one lap is very intense. But it seems like when things aren't going right for a team, everyone wants to help because I think the entire field wants to see everyone else do their best. And so,
that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, when you leave, if you miss the session and you come back, I bet there's not one team that doesn't come back and say, hey, we are so glad to see you're back. You know, hope you did okay. You know, we had two people that we helped out. One in Texas sent them to a shop we knew, and then Andy sent somebody, the Honda, to another shop. So, you know, the connections, that's the other thing you do. You kind of set up for your route as a veteran and say, hey, we're coming through. Just be on the lookout. Now, obviously, in the McLaren, we can't do that. But years past with the Honda, we had every city, every stop, somebody prepared to come help us if we needed it. So,
that's
kind of
sure that's helpful, especially given a particular car like the CRX that you used to drive.
Exactly.
Now I have a strategy and a style question. Every year, Brock prepares a route book. And it was my experience that we didn't use it at all, and we focused exclusively on like point to point as fast as possible. Brock does a pretty good job of like setting things up and pre-driving routes and things. Do you use the route book at all, or do you just like plug it into Waze and run it?
It's really interesting because there's two thought processes. One, you strictly use Waze and Google Map and go for it. But the other thought process is to follow the route map because you know he's coming up at the back. And if you have a big issue, you know that within probably an hour or two, Brock's going to be there, whether you need to be rescued or whatever. So we pretty much do a combination. I think we rely on Waze the most. Like yesterday, you know, the highway was shut down for 25 minutes and Waze has us go on express route. And then the other thing is there's the one lap drivers page that is just for competitors. And that saved us big time last night. So Virginia, you know, if you go 20 over, you're jailed.
Yeah,
and they're not really happy at 10 over. So Solomon called me, Solomon Rosenthal, who's driving with Billy Johnson, calls me. He's like, shut it down right now. He's like, there are six policemen in the median and you come up over the crest and there's a roadblock where it's down to one lane and they're just pulling people over right and left.
My goodness.
We don't know if that was we didn't know if it was a welcoming committee for one lap because Brock does let all the states know that we're coming through. So we have on previous ones had them waiting. And a couple of years ago going down through Colorado, they pulled over the whole median team, like, I don't know, six or eight cars and kept them for 2 hours.
My goodness.
Them for 2 hours, making a point.
That's kind of an element of one lap that we don't talk about very much is like the road rally portion of it. I mean, I think people see the transit, but like the community experience of the transit is itself kind of fun and interesting. And if you've never done road rallies before, they can be a lot of fun.
Exactly. You know, it's definitely part of it. And we kind of traded our strategy. I always slept in the morning, missed the morning session. Andy would come pick me up, and then I do the late night transit, so I'm fresh. But when he had his little incident a couple years ago, I was at the hotel. And I'm telling you, when you get that text, are you at the track, and then your phone blows up, it is not a good experience.
Oh, I bet not.
I'm getting up and coming, and that means I'm not rested for the late night transit. So we are alternating when we get tired every hour to hour and a half because, you know, Andy says, oh, it was a beautiful drive last night. Well, he was sound asleep while I'm driving through these twisty turning mountain passes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and at night, you don't know the roads, so we're a little bit more careful. But the other thing I was going to tell you was I had decided before yesterday that this was going to be my last one lap. I just was kind of ready to take a break. And then you see the car break, and it's like I go into mode. Like, I know who to go get parts from. I know who to ask this. I know who to ask that. I know to feed him food. He's going out on track right when the car is fixed. He hasn't eaten anything. And so I had to have a little – I cried. You know, you're tired. You're exhausted. The car breaks, and you struggle with keeping your husband safe. And so we talked about that last night, too. He's like, if it's not fun, don't come. But on the other hand, I'm the person that keeps him safe. I know.
Well, it's a weird thing, right? You're part of the team, and without you, the team is deficient, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I always say anyone's replaceable, but I don't know. We've been married 42 years. I'm not sure.
And you said that this is your 11th one lap?
Yeah, I think it's his 11th and my 10th. I missed one when our daughter.
You told me that.
Game.
But yeah. I mean, that's invaluable experience. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, we are together all the time. We race together for all those years. We just have a really awesome marriage and relationship. And this is the one thing that I can still do with him. So I don't know. I might have to rescind the, this is 10 and done.
I would say that, get home, spend a couple of days getting some rest, and then you'll think fondly of it again. I think every year it kind of beats it out of people. And then as soon as you're done, you're like, well, maybe I could do that again.
Right. Well, yesterday I was the reality check because one thought was to go ahead and get the part overnighted in, go to McLaren today, get it fixed, and then do an all night, transit overnight to make it up to Gingerman. And that I did say no. I never say no to him pretty much, but I was like, no, if we were winning 1, 2, 3 podium, maybe, but no. So I did say no,
gotcha.
But now the car's running. We didn't need to do that. So it's all good.
Well, thank you for the update. I love having you on the show.
Thanks for checking in with us. I figured we had a story for you, unfortunately. I would prefer that we had no story.
Well, it's always good to have a story, but have a safe transit to Gingerman. Go
right,
fast
thanks.
There because it's a fun place to drive. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to probably the final segment of today's day 6 coverage of One Lap of America. I'm here with Andy Smedegaard, who is part of Team Super K, kind of the builder and shop owner of ASM, a longtime Grid Life runner, time attacker, GLTC driver, wheelman extraordinaire, Andy Smedegaard.
Sorry, just eating lunch. thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. You guys have had a really exciting week, and we talked with Alex a few minutes ago. But today you're standing in the tower up over turn 10. What is that experience like versus being in the car?
Man, it is like 10 times more nerve wracking being outside the car than in the car. I don't know what it is. And I don't think it's just me because I hear the same thing about everyone else. The person outside having to watch, you have no control over what's about to happen. So just super nervous, heart's racing. You know, and for people that aren't familiar with one lap in the format, there's no redos. It is literally, you have one shot to do this. You get no practice. You get a little recon lap. So you get to drive around half the track just enough to see it. And then you pull up to the start line and you go. You know, you got 3 full laps. Every lap counts. And yeah, you can't screw up, you can't break, you can't nothing. It just has to go perfect.
Well, I don't want to jinx it, but since Eagles Canyon, it seems like the trans has been running okay. I know that Alex talked a little bit about changes that you had made to the cooling system to help keep the trans temps down. But can you talk with us a little bit about what provisions you've done to the trans over the last month or so to try and bring those temperatures down?
So, first off, we're no expert with this stuff. So we're still learning, you know, everything about the swap, the trans, the tuning part of it. So we were having issues a while back on our original test trans, the one that was in actually the car for up until the last month. It was the trans that was always in the car. And it would have issues after a while where the trans would get warm and then it would just get locked into gear. It would just stay in whatever gear it was and just be unresponsive. You could ask for it up or downshift, nothing. But you could continue to drive it. So like the GCU and stuff was still working, anti-stall stuff still working. And we kind of blamed it on just the trans being too hot. And it wasn't even crazy hot. I mean, it was probably 270 degrees Fahrenheit, 260 maybe, which is, that's too warm, more warmer than we want it, but it's not, I wouldn't think too crazy. So we've spent a lot of time adding coolers. We even went as far as adding a water cooler sprayer that's spraying water on the trans cooler. And it did help, but at Eagles Canyon, I should complete the whole story, fast forwarded too soon. We've added all this cooling, and one of our last test events we did was at Gingerman, and it was starting to just get stuck into gear after even like a lap and a half. Trans fluid wasn't even that hot at all, like maybe 180 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay,
still getting stuck in gear. So unsure of what it really was, I decided I'm just going to put a different trans in this car because this trans has been through hell. So I wired up a whole new trans, put it in the car. And this was at the NCM Grid Life. So that was 2 weeks before one lap.
For context, is this transmission number two or transmission number three?
It is transmission number two. The first one had a failure where we broke the clutch cover basket. And I just put a new clutch cover basket on and we continued to run it.
Got it.
So this is truly only trans number two now in the car. And that went in right before NCM, 2 weeks before one lap. And we actually told ourselves, if this car breaks, if it does not pass through NCM without a failure, we'll take it to one lap. But if it breaks, we're gonna take something else. We're gonna, I don't know, buy a, Alex wants it, has been wanting a new Type R. So he said, I'll buy a new Type R.
I'm like, yeah, right, I think he and I share that want.
Yeah. So, which I don't think is any better because I think those things overheat after like a lap and a half anyways.
Yeah, but it's stock and it's probably decently reliable.
Hopefully. Yeah. But anyways, so I put the new trans in before NCM and I had to do a little bit of tuning because the different transmissions, like the clutch engagement points and stuff are a little different. So I had to do a little tuning there. And we took it to NCM and it didn't break. It didn't shift as well, and I think this just came down to I didn't have it tuned correctly for this trans. There's a little bit of differences between the two, and it didn't shift as like the smoothness of it, the upshifts and the downshift blipping and all that stuff wasn't as smooth as the other trans, which just required some tuning changes, which we actually did on day one after the autocross of one lap. We made those changes because it was really bad, to the point where you'd ask for a downshift and it would blip late. Or the gear change would happen and then it would blip. So it was
upset the car a little really bit and things like
you'd
that.
You get a like little bit of like shift lock.
Was it kind of like what it was like at Barber when we were there in January? Yes. Got it.
Yep. That was
maybe you can drive around it, but it's definitely not helping you go faster.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you didn't want to even touch the downshift even mid, like if you were turning at all before, you did not downshift.
Gotcha.
Because, it would upset the rear. Now it's actually like on track, it's really well. You can downshift mid-corner and it doesn't really upset much. So, all right, going back, we passed, car passed at NCM, didn't break. So we decided, all right, let's take this on one lap and hopefully we make it. And I put some more street miles on the whole week before one lap, drove it on the streets, you know, just changed all the fluids on the car, everything. I was to a point where I was confident in, like, I was confident that I did everything I possibly could to my knowledge and my abilities to make sure that this car could complete in one lap.
Sure.
But it's still, I mean, I'm always questioning everything. Like, I don't know how long the train, you know, what's next to break? What other weak link have we not found yet? How long will this clutch cover, last before it breaks like the other one? And was that an issue with something else, or is that a harmonics issue with the engine? I don't know. There's just so many unknowns. So we went into one lap. Just my expectations was just, I truly felt something was going to break like day one, day two. But here it is. It's still going. The only trans issues we had was the improper tuning, the shift tuning, which I fixed right after the autocross. It made my autocross runs were horrible, and I can't believe I took second because it was some really shitty driving, and the trans doing its thing was even making it worse. But fixed that, got through Memphis, went awesome, drove all the way down to Texas. Everything's still perfect. Alex does the first session at, where were we? Eagles Canyon. And about almost the finish of the second lap, he gets locked into fourth gear. So he has to do a whole nother lap in fourth gear, without just no shifting. Just
that should remind you of your days running with the RS yes. Motors crew.
Yeah. When we got, we had a dog box then, and the shifter linkage popped off. So I had to do all of Gingerman in third gear.
But and with, I think yeah, you still lap, took. I think you still took P2 that day.
Yeah, that was it. Was a good gear to get locked into, that's for sure. And that's the same case that happened to Alex. He got locked into fourth, which is probably the perfect gear. You know, enough you can still get out of corners at a decent rate, and then just hang it in high revs for a while and just run off the straights. But with one lap, you have to finish. If you do not finish that session, that's a DNF, and there's no way you're coming out of the event in a top five or top 10 finish overall if you have any DNFs.
Yeah, that points penalty is so big. I mean, it's almost insurmountable.
Yeah. Like was it 360 points or something?
Yeah.
So, and each place is 5 point difference. So yeah, you're not competing in any sort of overall win with a DNF. So he completed, session one, in fourth gear. Got me really worried because, I mean, that's only the second real event and I'm like, man, it's going to be a long week. So, I had another thought of something to try. When we do these adaptations on the trans, which what the adaptation is doing is it's kind of learning how much effort it needs to move shift forks and all this stuff around. I've always done that just at normal operating temp, which for the trans is normally like 120 degrees Fahrenheit, not very hot. Okay. But when we come off track, the trans temp is usually like in the 190s, sometimes 200-ish.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, like, this is definitely something heat-related because we never get stuck in gear. I mean, we drove, at that point, over 1,000 miles on the street, never got locked in gear. It sure. only happens when the trans starts getting warm. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to try an adaptation when the trans fluid temp is near, like, hot, 180. I think I did it at, like, 160.
Okay.
Because he already has came off track and the trans cooled down, and I'm not going to go beat on the car just to get the trans temp back up. But I did an adaptation. And since then, and I don't know if this is the actual fix or because I did some other stuff too. I was really trying to like ice down our oil cooler, the trans oil cooler, and spray it down and keep that thing as cold as possible. And we would actually not even on our recon laps told Alex, just leave it in one gear, take it easy, you know, try everything you can so that
have the trans be as cold as possible when you start the lap.
Exactly. So we've been doing that too. So I don't know, maybe this adaptation thing has nothing. It hasn't really fixed the issue. It's just, we've kind of been avoiding letting the trans sure. even get close.
Well, I guess I want to ask, I know that this is still like an R&D project for you guys, and you will be the first to admit that it's, you know, it's not OEM like yet, but I wonder, you know, that trans in the BMWs, you know, as equipped from factory, I don't hear often people talking about the temperatures very much. So do you have any ideas for,
I have heard of people complaining about they do get hot, especially on higher powered BMWs. And adding cooling is definitely a, something that they usually do. But yeah, I honestly haven't heard of any BMW guys getting stuck in gear or anything like that.
Sure. So do you have any ideas for what maybe makes the swap generate heat differently?
I don't think it's the swap generate. I think it's generating the same heat, but I think it's more of like a GCU that the trans computer. I don't think there's compensation tables or something set up where, you know, if the trans temp is getting hotter, okay, I'm going to need more effort to move these shift forks around.
Gotcha.
Or it's a matter of, oh, the shifter didn't go into gear. I'm going to try it again. Or, you know, or some sort of fail safe or a timeout, like, oh, it didn't get into gear after a second. All right, I'll try again. Another second. Okay, no, not going into gear. And then it like maybe throws an error code or something.
Sure.
This GCU, it doesn't have any error codes. It doesn't have any limp mode or anything. So it might just try to go into gear, and I can't go into gear. I'm just going to not
stay
do anything.
Put. Gotcha.
Yep.
Well, I mean, we're absolutely rooting for you guys. I'm interested. I mean, the lead that Tom has right now is very large, and I think it would be a remarkable achievement I would say that Tom might have to have some bad luck in order to
for sure.
lose this lead. So I wonder, in terms of strategy going forward, are you, especially at Gingerman, which is kind of a home track for you guys, you know, is the expectation that you might turn the power up a little bit just to see if you can go quick, or are you going to,
do enough
to finish second?
I want to finish. I'm not looking at winning overall. If, like you said, it would have to be some sort of stroke of bad luck for them to, you know, give them it'd have to be a DNF, honestly. It would have to be something that would completely take them out and almost give them a DNF, which I don't want by any means. I want them to finish. I think he's got to just do decent. Like, he doesn't even have to be the fastest. And even if we beat him, and we could gap him by 10 seconds at Gingerman, that's not helping us.
And it wouldn't be enough because it would probably only be 5 points, right?
So, right. So it's not worth the risk at all to turn the power up.
So, you know,
in fact, we just need, I just want to finish, man. If we can finish, I don't care if it's a third place, you know, I'm still way beyond my expectations.
Sure. So, you know, you and the guys at Shaky Dog are good friends. And, you know, I wonder though, with the dry skid pad still coming up, I mean, you guys are going to be neck and neck on track for the rest of the week. As long as all the cars are running fine, you know, you're similarly paced, but, the dry skid pad is a wild card always, because sometimes it can be wet, and you know, if it's dry, the tires are, you know, closing in on their end of life. So, like, how do you hedge your bets to make sure that if you want to take P2, you can get it at the end of the event?
We feel confident that we'll do pretty well at the dry skid pad. We made a dry tire choice. We're on the AO52s. Our car has been seems to have been a strong point that seems to be grip in corner speeds. Our car does not make power. So we've been able to beat a lot of the guys just in corners. And I think the circle track we did the other day.
Congratulations kind of on P1 at Lanier.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I think that's kind of a glimpse of what the dry skid pad hopefully will be kind of like.
As long as it's dry.
We did look at the weather. It looks like it should be a dry skid pad, which would be good. And I feel that's kind of hopefully our saving grace. If we get really close with points, that the dry skid pad will give us the gap we need to hopefully secure and keep second.
Gotcha.
Because I think the Shaky Dog guys are going to be pretty close. I think they're, after the first session today, I think, man, it might be like 10-15 point gap.
So I just pulled up the times. It looks like they had just refreshed. You guys, hold on. Super K finished P11 at Summit Point, 401.822. Tom did a 355.7, and the GT500, obviously these huge power cars are so fast, 357, 358, 359, so on and so forth. So the aero helping you a lot, but on a track like this with a straight so long, being down, you know, being down 300 horsepower has its downfalls, right?
Yeah, for sure. I've never driven this track, but several people have said the power can make up a lot here.
Yep. So I know that you have work to do. Let's talk for a second, if you can, about what you've been doing on the one lap TTRS this morning.
The TTRS, not a lot. I mean, the car's been running pretty good. He had some all wheel drive. Well, he has been having all wheel drive issues with the Haldex stuff for quite a while now, And we've been fighting that. And leading into one lap, we kind of had this last-ditch effort to hook up a separate controller and have the actual Cybex computer, the engine ECU, control the all-wheel drive haul decks. And it was kind of just a patch Band-Aid. And I was questioning it from the beginning if it would work or not. And it eventually burned up a pump after day, I don't know, after day one or two or something. I can't remember the day exactly. It's all confusing now. But, yeah, he was fighting some all-wheel drive issues in, I think, Eagles Canyon. And I don't know where we were at before. Memphis? I can't remember when it happened. But anyways, he got that fixed. He found a new pump, put a new pump in, and it's been working okay since. But the thing, I think they made the wrong tire choice this year. And the tire choice is always like the hardest part of the event because you never know what you're going
to get. And some days it's just a dice roll.
Right, exactly. It is. It's a full dice roll. And there was a couple days where like we thought for sure we made the worst tire choice ever doing the Advance. But then like the morning, it was just barely damp. Sun's coming out. Things are drying up. And oh my God, it's perfect for Advance.
Right.
You know, so we have really gotten super lucky with our tire choice so far. And I think that's honestly a big reason we're near the top is we're able to really capitalize on having that grip.
Gotcha. And so
I think that's where the TTRS, I think, is suffering a little bit being on those PS4Ss, which is a good tire if it's a lot of rain, but it hasn't been much rain.
So, but Alex said that you were indisposed when I called him because you were underneath the car, just maintenance things or.
Yeah, kind of just trying to keep after stuff. And that's thing with one lap, you know, you can't have a failure, so you need to catch any little thing beforehand. So we were just kind of under there looking, checking every, you know, nut and bolt and topping off diff fluid and that kind of stuff. Nothing major.
So I guess maybe my final question before I let you go is, you know, you're the kind of person to help everybody who needs help in the track, whether, you know, with a mechanical issue, if you have the ability. I'm wondering though, for this event specifically, for how many cars are you like the primary mechanic if something goes wrong?
I mean, really only
two,
only one or two. Yeah. And we've been pretty lucky because we haven't had anything that has taken major amounts of work, but my whole strategy has always been as soon as that car comes off track, it's prep time. Like get the wheels off, check everything over, get the fuel in there, like right away. Don't waste time doing anything. And then once all that's done, and you're 100% sure it's ready to go back on track, then you can sit down or go to a different car or something. And
sure.
So I try to prioritize. I mean, you need to keep, you know, Super K's priority one, TTRS two, no offense, guys. and then after that, you know, then.
Well, they've already gotten their wins. So like, you know,
yeah, right.
Like going just, for another yeah. is just trying to brag.
Yeah, right.
Well, I know that you have plenty of work to do. Thank you for taking a little bit of time to talk with us on the show. It's absolutely. Always... a pleasure hearing about what you guys are doing with the DCT swap. It's very, very cool. And I hope that you guys have a fantastic afternoon, evening, long transit to Gingerman, and then have an absolute blast to Gingerman tomorrow.
Are we going to see you in South Bend?
I don't think so.
Come on, Abe.
I know. I went up to Gingerman for Taco Track Day yesterday, and I have family in town. On Sunday, so like maybe I can go, but I'm sure that I'll get some looks of disapproval. We'll see.
Yeah, just say it's for work.
Yeah, I mean it's one lap, right? Like I've right. gone to the finish of one lap every year since before I started driving one lap.
Yeah, so why ruin tradition?
I don't know. I wasn't planning on it, but now you got me thinking.
I think you need to. I'll get the Coronas.
Oh, I love Coronas, especially at Tire Rack. They're the best.
Yeah.
All right. Well, go back, prep the car, make sure everything's safe for Alex, and then tell him to drive a little bit harder.
Will do.
Talk to you later, buddy.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes and come and find us in the pits at A Grid Live to say hello.